The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is on, and today we are tackling pelvic pain with our guest expert, urogynecologist, Dr. Lennox Hoyt. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in the country with 1,800 women, are supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based health safety net, making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families. And so, as indicated above, Dr. Hoyt, Lennox Hoyt, is with me today. He is the director of female pelvic medicine and reconstructive surgery at USF and Tampa General Hospital. He treats women with prolapse, incontinence, bladder control problems, and pelvic pain. Lennox holds degrees in engineering from MIT and medicine from Stanford. His OBGYN residency training was at Harvard and fellowship training in urogynecology from Loyola. A board-certified obstetrician gynecologist, he has authored articles on urogynecology and pelvic surgery and is a reviewer for medical journals. He speaks to lay and medical audiences internationally about childbirth injury and urogynecology. His clinical research seeks to understand why childbirth injuries happen to some women and not to others. And once again, Lennox, you were here some time ago, and we were working on or tackling bladder incontinence. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. Good to be here, Steve. Good to see you.
And this is really a golden opportunity for every woman out there who is listening to the show, or for that matter, spouses, boyfriends who are aware of their spouses or girlfriends' problems or irritation or pain in the pelvic area, to call in, as Lennox is quite an expert in this area, and he is the man to ask the questions to help guide you. And so call in with your questions, 289-1860. That's 289-1860, or if you're in Hillsborough County. Outside of Hillsborough, it's 877-969-8600, and that's a toll-free number. So, you know, Lennox, when we think about the pelvis, of course, in women, I guess there are three different systems that come into play: the digestive, the urinary system, as well as the gynecologic.
quite right, Steve. There's actually a fourth system in play that we don't usually think of. That's the musculoskeletal system, mm-hmm. involving the pelvic floor muscles, the abdominal wall muscles, and a number of other muscles that we all use, male and female, to help maintain balance. When these systems go out of whack, they can result in the symptoms of pain.
Okay, so this is what you are what runs through your mind as you're evaluating patients when they share with you their symptoms. Most of the thinking is in one of these categories. I guess you can see problems in multiple or more than one of these systems.
Absolutely. Presenting pain symptoms have to do with thinking about what is the most likely cause of the pain. And if you're looking at a woman in the reproductive age group, one of the things that you have to consider strongly is the possibility of an abnormal pregnancy placed perhaps in a tube that could also cause pain like this. Other issues have to do with cysts on the ovaries, really very enlarged cysts that could be twisting on themselves that could cause pain. Appendicitis, certainly in reproductive age women, is something that needs to be considered. And other areas that need to be considered have to do with sexually transmitted infections in the pelvis, sometimes fibroids or abnormal uterine muscle leading to pain with periods.
Well, that's a nice kind of overview. It's interesting, earlier in the year, or perhaps even late last year, we did a show on multiple sclerosis, and we had a guest on. It was a patient from California, and she has an interesting story because she had had just excruciating pelvic pain, which was had been evaluated, found to be not, could not find a cause in the gynecologic arena or the urinary tract or the digestive, and it turned out to be spasm of that musculature.
Absolutely, and we have.
Let me just say that the reason we came to this conclusion is that she was told by her neurologist because of her MS, multiple sclerosis, to not exercise whatsoever. At risk of increasing her multiple sclerosis symptoms. So she went on for years and years with literally not exercising whatsoever, and unbeknownst to her, this was causing evidently terrific spasm in that area, which was could not be diagnosed as to the underlying cause. It was only when she started exercising, she had gone to a new neurologist, did a little bit of stretching and exercise, minimal, not so, to the point where her MS symptoms would return, but enough to relax her pelvic musculature, and that made a difference.
Absolutely, and I'm glad you mentioned that, Steve, because the large majority of women that come to my practice to be evaluated for pelvic pain have already been completely evaluated by a number of other physicians, and issues like appendicitis, fibroids, cysts, adenomyosis, sexually transmitted infections.
Adenomyosis would be?
Abnormal growth of the uterine lining growing into the uterine muscle itself, so that these women, when they have terrible pain with their periods, that's because the muscle of the uterus itself is trying to shed.
And is that known as fibroids, another term for fibroids?
It's a little different? Actually quite different from fibroids. Okay. Fibroids and the abnormal growth of the muscle cells themselves. The adenomyosis has to do with the lining of the uterus growing into the muscle itself, creating pain.
Okay.
It's another version of endometriosis, which is another term that many of our pelvic pain patients are familiar with. But I guess the point I was trying to make is that a number of these women have had these things ruled out, evaluated, ultrasounds, MRIs, studies, the whole works, and still find themselves in pain. And the great majority of these patients, Steve, tend to have an issue related to muscle spasm in the pelvic floor.
I know that's an area of particular interest to you.
It is, and not because I started out that way, but because in trying to treat these women mm-hmm. with no obvious explanation for their pain, a lot of them were being told by their physicians that it's all in their heads mm-hmm. and they need to go see a psychiatrist and be on pain medicines and such, when in fact a simple evaluation and exam was able to demonstrate active trigger points in the pelvic floor that could be cured completely.
Well, this is Lennox and I feel look at things in medicine very similarly. We're both very innovative. And which, again, is a great opportunity for those out there that have undiagnosed pelvic pain to call in with your questions. And once again, that's 289-1860 in Hillsborough. Outside of Hillsborough County, it's 877-969-8600. And as you say, a lot of these patients, whether it be my practice with dry eyes or your practice, they're being told that it's all in their head when there is some physiologic reason for it.
Absolutely. And I think the most important thing for our patients to know, for women to know, is that, you know, there's a saying in medicine that we say, and I think you say the same thing too, believe the patient.
Mm-hmm.
The patients are almost never wrong about what their symptoms
right.
are.
And so the challenge for the physician is to identify the cause of those symptoms, not to say it's in your head, but to give them the benefit of the doubt and to identify. And sometimes you have to have an innovative approach to do that.
Absolutely. And, you know, for years, many of us thought about the pelvic floor as strictly the digestive system, the reproductive system, and the urinary system.
Mm-hmm.
And if we couldn't find things wrong with one of those three, we'd send the patients away. And lo and behold, you know, 200 years later, we've discovered again the musculoskeletal system and mm-hmm. realized that that could be a great source of pain. That could be a tremendous mimic.
Mm-hmm.
So musculoskeletal pain can mimic bladder pain. It can mimic pelvic pain. It can mimic GI pain, mm-hmm. pain with bowel movements mm-hmm. and such. So much, much to be done and much cure available for those women.
Mm-hmm. Can a listener might wonder, can muscle relaxants help this type of pain?
You know, that's an interesting question, and I've tried them in my quest for trying to look for the optimum therapy for my patients. Muscle relaxants don't discriminate about which muscles they relax. And so if you have a pelvic floor muscle, like the levator ani muscle, which is the muscle that most women do the Kegel exercise with, if that muscle has an active trigger point in it, and you take a muscle relaxant, well, you're going to relax the shoulder muscles and the neck muscles and the back muscles and the thigh muscles. And so that probably wouldn't give as good a solution as if you directed your therapy directly towards mm-hmm. the muscle that had the issue.
So there may be some unintended consequences.
Absolutely.
And you can now offer, is what I'm hearing, you can offer specific targeted therapy to those specific muscles that are in spasm or causing the woman's symptoms.
Absolutely. And we actually are fortunate here in Tampa to have a number of qualified female pelvic floor physical therapists who actually also happen to be women themselves that are very dedicated and work on the pelvic floor, abdominal wall, and trunk and thigh muscles to help relieve these symptoms. And they're here in Tampa.
Okay, so in this case, you would provide the diagnosis and then direct the patient to a physical therapist, and the patient would visit a physical therapist
once or twice weekly.
Okay, and perform some exercises at home as well?
Absolutely. So the physical therapist would examine them and would create a comprehensive plan for getting these women with musculoskeletal issues treated.
Mm-hmm. How about
and cured, by the way, I need to say.
And cured, okay, excellent. A diagnosis of a chronic bladder infection, chronic cystitis, is sometimes a therapeutic challenge, I understand. Can a chronic cystitis also be related to abnormal musculature activity?
Yes. So the condition used to be called and has been called interstitial cystitis, and we're moving now towards a diagnosis that a name more related to the symptom, namely painful bladder syndrome. And the symptom basically is that women feel like they have a bladder infection, feel urgency and bladder pain whenever they need to urinate or try to urinate. There's been some studies that show that symptom is associated a lot with musculoskeletal issues as well, that if you treat the musculoskeletal issues, you can have some improvement in the bladder pain syndrome. And there are also some therapies available directly for treating the bladder as well, which we do offer in our practice, and many urologists and urogynecologists offer as well.
Outstanding. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back for more with Dr. Lennox Hoyt, the topic, pelvic pain, and the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. More in a few moments.
Profile America, Sunday, June 28th. Nostalgia for old forms of transportation highlights two festivals winding up today. In Cascade Locks, Oregon, Sternwheeler Days will celebrate the riverboats that plied the nation's waterways for more than a century. In Galesburg, Illinois, the focus is on the town's railroad heritage, which goes back to the 1850s when it became an important hub for east-west traffic. As such, the town was the site of the fifth and most famous of the debates between Abraham Lincoln and Stephen Douglas. At the time of the Lincoln-Douglas debate, there were some 27,000 miles of railroad track in the U.S. Track miles peaked in 1930 at 430,000. Today, railroads run on less than half that mileage. Profile America is a public service of the U.S. Census Bureau, now preparing for the 2010 census.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
Do your eyes have a foreign body sensation or are scratchy and sandy? Do they burn, sting, or itch, or are heavy and tired? Maybe your eyes are sensitive to light or your eyelids achy and sore. Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but you'll have to live with this and nothing can be done for you? Well, first, it's likely you suffer from dry eye. And second, don't stand for those answers anymore. Just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems, go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you will be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with the doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain, fluctuating vision, and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. Haven't you waited long enough?
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back on Focus on Females. This is Steve Maskin. My special guest today is Dr. Lennox Hoyt, a urogynecologist, and we are tackling pelvic pain. Let's talk a little bit, Lennox, about postpartum pelvic pain or after childbirth.
Yeah. It's interesting, Steve, you mentioned that I just this past week got an email from a woman who had mentioned that her daughter had gone through a vaginal delivery. And, you know, the delivery went fine, but lo and behold, when she tried to get up after that, she just couldn't stand. It was just terribly painful to try and walk. That woman was diagnosed with something called symphyseal separation of the pubic symphysis, which is usually a very painful development associated with vaginal childbirth.
Well, before we go further, if you explain to the listeners what the pubic symphysis is.
It is that area right where the pubic bone is, just in the pelvis, that you can feel if you put your hand probably about two hands' breadth below the belly button, you can feel that bone in the midline there. That area has to open up in order to let the baby's head through. And so it separates a little bit during normal childbirth, but sometimes it separates so much that the patient is unable to walk. That girdle, if you will, the pelvic bony girdle, is required in order to let you walk properly. And when that symphysis is separated, it can cause a twisting that can be extremely painful.
Okay.
I've seen that rarely in my practice. I've seen it about three or four times over the years. And usually that problem goes away usually about 6 to 8 weeks with the use of anti-inflammatory medications like ibuprofen, for example. Usually not something to that's life threatening or long lasting.
Okay.
But very painful in the short term.
Okay. And so the typical treatment is the anti-inflammatories, a typical one being like Advil.
Advil, ibuprofen, Motrin, Aleve, Naprosyn.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Are there other, this can happen, I imagine, immediately after childbirth.
Right. So as the whole activity of pushing, getting the vaginal delivery to happen is what we believe the source of this problem is. Mm-hmm. Any vaginal childbirth. Fortunately, it doesn't happen a lot, but when it does, it can be pretty, pretty scary to the woman that's happening to, and she just needs to be aware to just be evaluated for it and make sure it's nothing more serious than that.
Mm-hmm. What are other typical postpartum or post-delivery causes of pelvic pain, say in the top three categories, the top three diagnoses?
One of the really important ones to know about is something called postpartum endometritis, which is an inflammation or an infection of the lining of the uterus after the placenta and baby have been delivered. That can sometimes happen after vaginal deliveries, especially after long labors. It can sometimes happen after cesarean section. And one of the ways that you know that this is going on is that the uterus tends to be very tender.
Okay.
Very, very tender.
And is it tender from above if you push through the abdomen?
Absolutely. Okay. Correctly. Yes. Correct.
All right. Yeah. So the patient can say, look, I push on my belly.
It's really, really
and
tender.
It's really tender.
Yeah.
And how would you evaluate that patient and how would you treat a patient like that?
Usually the evaluation has to do with just feeling the uterus and feeling it to be exquisitely tender, making sure that there's nothing other in the other systems, like normal bladder function, normal bowel function, no significant discharge, no heavy bleeding. Once that diagnosis is made, we can go ahead and treat with antibiotics. Usually that can resolve over a few days.
Are cultures necessary, or you just treat broad
spectrum?
Usually
broad spectrum antibiotics geared towards the uterine lining.
Okay. And that would go away, within a few days at that point?
A few days, yes, it should.
All right. And what other, two other common postpartum diagnoses for pelvic pain?
Sometimes you can have, in the delayed postpartum period, you might have some more muscle spasm issues in the thigh muscles, the abdominal wall muscles, the back of the legs, from the position that you take when you're pushing in labor.
All right. And of course, the other thing is to, I guess this is maybe uncommon, to have a complete removal of the placenta. Can a placenta separate during delivery or after delivery, of course?
Well, you want it to separate and come out, and sometimes parts of the placenta break off and stay inside the uterus, and if that goes on for too long a period of time, that can also be painful, and that could be also one of the causes of the endometritis.
Okay. Yeah. All right, and once again, every woman that's out there listening to this, I know you have a question about pelvic pain. Feel free, call in, speak with the experts. That's 289-1860 in Hillsborough County. Outside of Hillsborough County, 877-969-8600. Dr. Lennox Hoy is here to answer your questions and discuss your case. Lennox, tell me about the if one has a bulge or something falling out that you can see or feel in the vaginal area, what thoughts run through your mind?
Usually, women complaining, again, my first principle is believe the patient. If the woman is complaining that there is something falling out of the vaginal area or bulging out, I'm thinking about prolapse of the vaginal walls or of the bladder. Usually prolapse itself, it's not a painful situation, but if it can lead to symptoms of bladder fullness and incomplete bladder emptying, that can certainly be a painful situation. So I've had patients come to me with a bladder that couldn't empty due to prolapsing vaginal walls or bulging vaginal walls, and they can often be in quite a bit of pain and would need a catheter in the bladder in advance of correcting the prolapse.
Well, that brings up, let's say you do that, you put a catheter in there and you drain the bladder, how do you mobilize that vaginal walls or retrain it to properly avoid, is it inadvertent or abnormal contraction leading to this bulging?
Yeah, usually if you think of the vagina as a long muscular tube.
And we'll be right back to answer that question on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Focus, oh yeah, the focus. Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
Focus on females.
With SRN News, I am Michael Harrington in Washington. Florida police say TV pitchman Billy Mays has died after being found by his wife at their Tampa home. They say they do not suspect foul play in the 50-year-old's death. Mays is known for his energetic commercials featuring products such as Orange Glow and OxyClean. Police say information from the cardiologist who was with Michael Jackson in his final hours will help them with their investigation. They spent 3 hours questioning Dr. Conrad Murray yesterday. And a spokesman says he, quote, helped identify the circumstances around the death and clarified some inconsistencies. Witnesses in Iran say police have clashed with up to 3,000 protesters near a mosque in North Tehran. They say security forces fired tear gas to disperse the crowd. And Honduran President Manuel Zelaya says he's the victim of a coup and a brutal kidnapping by soldiers. He has been taken to a distant location. This is SRN News.
Digital goddess Kim Komando here. Spam, I hate it. The email kind, and it's coming to your cell phone. This weekend, how to stop those annoying Viagra, overnight riches, and lottery-winning ads right in their tracks. Because after all, the government has done a fine job stopping it all with the Can't Spam Act. Yeah, right. It's just one thing you'll walk away with by listening to the Kim Komando Show right here this weekend.
Kim Komando, Sunday afternoon at 2 on Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon, Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. Dr. Maskin manages these dry eye disorders using innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has been successfully managing difficult dry eye cases for over 20 years and is board-certified, fellowship-trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and American Academy of Ophthalmology. He's been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2009 and as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America. We hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please, visit drmaskin.com, and if you have not found relief for your painful red dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back once again to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Today we're tackling pelvic pain with expert Dr. Lennox Hoyt, who is at USF and Tampa General Hospital. And we left the last segment speaking about bulging in the vaginal area, which can impact urination. And you mentioned that the vaginal wall and the muscles in the vaginal wall may prolapse and affect a woman's ability to eliminate urine. And at times, women may need catheterization. But also, at that point, how do they go ahead and get those vaginal muscles to not prolapse?
Yeah, actually, Steve, I was going to finish that. The vaginal tube itself, if you think of it as a long tube, is supported normally up at the top by the uterus and the uterine ligaments, and then off to the side as well. That keeps it in place and allows the bladder to sit on top of the vagina and allows the rectum to be held in place by the vagina. When the vaginal tissues lose their support, either at the top or at the side, that's called prolapse, and that results in the bulging. That's a mechanical problem that needs a mechanical fix, namely a surgical fix to re-tack or resuspend the vagina. And that's what most doctors mean when they talk about pelvic reconstructive surgery, replacing the vagina in a position such that it can hold the other organs in place and allow for sexual intercourse. Another issue that is really, really important for a number of our patients is that the muscles that surround the vagina, that hold the vagina in place, are called the pelvic floor muscles. The other name for them are the levator ani muscles. And they are like a hammock, if you will, that keeps the vagina, bladder, and rectum in place. Mm-hmm. Often we... As physicians, tell our patients to go ahead and do your Kegel exercises, which is an exercise that tightens the levator ani muscle. And we often forget to tell our patients to actually spend time relaxing those muscles as well. So if you imagine those levator ani muscles constantly held in a contracted position, if you do that over long periods of time, you can develop trigger points in those muscles. And the trigger points can lead to pain, heaviness, difficulty with urination, and actually constipation, to where you can't have your stool come out in the way that you want. So, as I mentioned, absent the diagnoses that we talked about, many of the patients that end up in my office end up as patients who have trigger points, active, painful trigger points in the pelvic floor muscles, creating pain, pain with intercourse, what's really important to know, pain with sexual intercourse, difficult defecation, and also just chronic pain and heaviness, pressure in the pelvic floor. A lot of these women also complain of recurrent UTI symptoms, and that have to do with the fact that trigger points in the pelvic floor can actually show up in the brain as a feeling of bladder fullness and a need to urinate.
Can it actually lead to, I think you said it can lead to recurrent urinary tract infections. Is that because of stasis in the urinary bladder?
Well, it's actually interesting. It actually leads to the symptoms of urinary tract infections, which means frequency of urination and urgency.
But
not actual UTIs. When a lot of these women will come in and say, I had these UTIs, but when they culture the urine, the culture always comes back negative. Classic symptom. Recurrent UTI symptoms, pain with intercourse, and painful pressure in the pelvic floor, usually when put together, equals myofascial or musculoskeletal pain syndrome in the pelvic floor that is completely curable.
It sounds like this myofascial or muscular pain is perhaps one of the most common diagnoses you're making as a subspecialist.
Well, as a subspecialist, but you got to be careful, because when a woman shows up in the reproductive age group with pain in the abdomen, we have to think of appendicitis, which is life-threatening. We have to think of a torsed ovarian cyst, which could be life-threatening. We have to think of fibroids or adenomyosis, which is not life-threatening but could be a nuisance. And we have to think of ectopic pregnancy, which can also be life-threatening. There's also STD, sexually transmitted infections, pelvic inflammatory disease.
And let's talk about...
Well, by the time the patients get to me, that's all been taken
evaluated
and ruled out.
Right.
So if I'm a frontline physician seeing a patient for the first time, I must first think of those things that we just talked about. After ruling those obvious... quote, usual suspects out.
Right.
By the time they get to me, what remains usually is a pelvic pain syndrome related to myofascial issues.
How about pelvic inflammatory disease? I imagine this could be a cause of pelvic pain.
Absolutely. Pelvic inflammatory disease is simply a expanding sexually transmitted infection that started out as a gonorrheal or chlamydial infection in the uterine cervix, which changed the biological activity in the uterus in a way that the uterus, the tubes, and sometimes the ovaries can get very inflamed and swollen and become very painful. That's called pelvic inflammatory disease. That usually is not life-threatening, usually, but it's something that must be treated, or it can interfere with fertility, or sometimes can cause a loss, a need for surgical removal of the reproductive organs.
So, of course, and there I imagine, what guidelines would you give women that have a discharge in the reproductive age as far as when they should see their doctor, because they obviously don't want to develop this disease?
Right. So the primary and the most significant and probably the major risk factor for pelvic inflammatory disease is a sexually transmitted infection. And so it's really important that if you're in a monogamous one-partner relationship and you're very clear that you're just each other's partners singularly, and neither of you have an STD, it's unlikely that you will develop pelvic inflammatory disease, usually. So if you're in a monogamous relationship, PID is probably not the thing that you're thinking of first. So that allows you, I think, to rest a little bit easier. The other thing that I want to say is that most women of reproductive age will have some kind of discharge. After all, the uterine cervix and the vagina has a number of glands that actually make a secretion that helps to keep the vagina lubricated, safe, and acidic. And so most discharge that's clear, that does not have an odor, that is not a lot, that's not soaking pads, is usually considered normal. Mm-hmm. Obviously, at the time of menses, you would have a discharge that's bloody, that's the menstrual flow. Discharge that's concerning, it's a thickened discharge. Sometimes some people refer to it as a cottage cheesy appearing discharge that can usually be associated with a yeast infection, or a discharge that has a fishy odor to it that can sometimes be associated with something called bacterial vaginosis, which is not an STD, but can be quite distressing to women that actually have this discharge with an odor that's easily treated and cured.
Mm-hmm. Now, the vaginosis, would that cause, that doesn't cause pelvic pain?
That does not cause pelvic pain. It just it's a discharge with an odor.
Okay. So when would a woman be concerned about the possibility, let's say that they think that their spouse is loyal, but perhaps not. One doesn't necessarily know. What are the tip-offs that they should consider that they have perhaps a serious infection?
Yellow-green discharge with an odor, pain with intercourse, pain in the abdomen.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This would not necessarily cause a fever?
Not necessarily. I think by the time the pelvic inflammatory disease has set in and is causing a fever, it's pretty advanced at that point.
Okay.
And that would usually require hospitalization.
Okay. And let's see. Let's talk a little bit about ovarian cysts. You mentioned before that this is a potentially serious cause of pelvic pain. Is there an age group or if you've got an ovary, then you can have a cyst?
Sure. Well, the most important thing, a lot of patients come to me and say, Dr. Hoyt, you know, I've been diagnosed with ovarian cysts. And my response to that is every reproductive age woman that has an ovary will make ovarian cysts every month. That's how ovulation happens. And so these cysts in the normal progression on the ovary can get up to 2, sometimes 3 centimeters in size and not be a cause for alarm.
That's large. How large is a regular ovary?
Regular ovary is probably 1.5 to 2 centimeters.
So the actual cyst can be larger than the
slightly,
the ovary.
Yeah. The ovaries in reproductive age women look pretty robust. Mm-hmm. I mean, they can get pretty bulky. Mm-hmm. Now, when the combination of the ovary and the cyst in the ovary gets on the order of 5 centimeters or more, 5 centimeters is about 2 inches, then it puts itself at risk for twisting on itself and choking off the blood supply. Mm-hmm. That's called ovarian torsion. And when that does occur, that can be a source of terrible pelvic pain, and that usually requires treatment, usually surgical, to untorse or untwist the ovary. Usually,
would that happen in a certain part of the menstrual cycle?
Right. Yeah, it can happen anywhere in the menstrual cycle.
Anytime in the menstrual cycle.
Sure.
Okay, and that'll be localized to one side of the pelvis.
Usually, women that have come in have described it as a crampy pain, a torsed ovarian cyst. Pain is usually a doubling over kind of pain, feeling nauseous, feeling vague, general crampiness and pain in the abdominal area below the belly button.
Okay. All right. And again, to remind our listeners out there to call in with your questions, that's 289-1860. That's in Hillsborough County, outside of Hillsborough County, 877-969-8600. We're talking about pelvic pain. And let's talk a little bit about the situation where a woman may feel a lot of pressure in their pelvic area, and perhaps had ultrasound and STD testing all negative. What could be the problem?
So usually when we think about pressure in the pelvic area, we want to just think of making sure that there's not a mass or an enlarged structure there, like an enlarged fibroid uterus, a large uterus with adenomyosis, or a large ovarian cyst. With an ultrasound study and a good exam, that should be pretty straightforward to rule out. Once that's ruled out and the symptom of pressure in the pelvic area is still present, then we'd go back to the pelvic floor muscles and look at the musculoskeletal system. And more often than not, we would find a very tightly held pelvic floor muscle or active trigger points in the pelvic floor muscles, which would, when treated, cure the actual feeling of pressure. That pressure is sometimes also associated with difficult defecation.
And how about pain related to different parts of the menstrual cycle? Say, for example, terrible pain when a period first begins, and maybe that pain goes on until the woman stops bleeding.
And usually that's usually associated with something called endometriosis or adenomyosis. Basically, normal shedding of the endometrial lining, which is what a period really is, if the endometrial lining is normally placed in the uterus, the shedding of that usually is associated with some crampiness that's pretty, for many women, tolerable. If that uterine lining or endometrial lining occurs deep in the muscle of the uterus itself or in areas outside of the uterus, like in on the outside of the tubes or on the outside of the ovaries, that could be called endometriosis if it's outside the uterus, or adenomyosis if that's inside the lining of the uterus. Those tend to be very painful, usually associated with the period time itself. Once the period starts, it's painful. Once the period stops, the pain usually goes away.
And fascinating, this disease is fascinating. We had last week, we did with Dr. Madeline Butler, we did a segment on endometriosis, and it was brought up that in rare occasions, as you said, these patches of cells can actually be on the external surface of organs. For example, on the external or serosal surface of bowel.
Correct, or of the bladder.
Of the bladder, and can actually invade.
Sometimes, yes.
Yeah. This is quite interesting. Of course, it's by no means any kind of a malignancy.
It is not cancer.
But it has the ability to actually invade healthy tissue from the outside.
That is correct. Yes.
So, now, endometriosis as a cause of pelvic pain, and in that case, of course, it could occur. Well, it still is related to the part of the cycle,
mm-hmm.
right? A certain part of the cycle, but could that pain be in various different areas, depending upon where the patch of the endometriosis is located?
And that certainly is theoretically the case. In looking at what endometriosis does, there are ways that if you put a laparoscope in a woman who is having, for another reason, for appendicitis, for example, you can look in the pelvis and see lots and lots of evidence of endometriosis, and that woman has no pain. There are other women that would show up with lots and lots of pain related to the period, and you would put a laparoscope in and you might see one or two of the dots of endometriosis that you have to ask yourself at that point, could those dots be causing the pain that the patient has presented with? And that's still a question that's up in the air. In fact, the major impact of endometriosis happens in the infertility space, where it can actually affect the implantation or the fertilization and implantation of an egg.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so we've covered a number of different causes of pelvic pain. Right from the start, you mentioned about ectopic pregnancies or pregnancy or implantation in the tube, for example. We mentioned ovarian cyst. We talked about sexually transmitted diseases and uterine fibroids, endometriosis, and again, once those more urgent diagnoses have been evaluated and ruled out, then top of the list at that point is the pelvic floor musculature.
That's the next place I would go to evaluate. One of the causes that we didn't talk about is actually kidney stones can actually be a cause of pain in the pelvis as well. And so you want to just make sure that that has been considered.
Okay. Let's talk about, let's see. Is there any does genetics play a component when you're looking at patients with pelvic floor pain? Do you consider family history? Is that important in your evaluation of the patient?
You know, I haven't to date, because usually, after talking with the patient and examining them, I usually can end up with a good diagnosis and a treatment plan geared towards cure. I'm sure that if we looked hard enough and thought about it hard enough, we might find a relationship, but I haven't seen one.
Okay. Very good. All right, we're going to take a quick break and come back for more on pelvic pain on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Hi, it's Chris Gould, and you may have read the recent article in the Washington Post featuring Jim Daly, the new president and CEO of Focus on the Family. Of course, Focus on the Family is the Colorado Springs ministry founded by child psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson. Well, Jim Daly's past, especially his childhood, may surprise you. His father left when he was 5 years old. His mother died when he was 9. His stepfather abandoned the family after that, and he went to live with a totally dysfunctional foster care family. Jim Daly then ended up living in a trailer when he was 17. Wow, those are some pretty challenging childhood experiences, yet Jim Daly remains positive and motivated and upbeat about his new role at Focus. And ultimately, he's very grateful, as am I, for the redemptive truth-telling that both Focus and Salem are involved with each and every day. Thanks for listening.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you. Confused about dry eye? Not getting answers as to why your eyes are so red and painful and your blurry vision that gets a little better with a good blink? Now you can learn all about dry eye, the causes, treatments, and home remedies from the number one best-selling consumer book on dry eye problems, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome by Dr. Stephen Maskin. Published by Yale University Press, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome has been selected as a 2008 Best Book of the Year by the Association of American University Presses and a 2007 Best Consumer Health Book by Library Journal. Find answers for your dry eye. Go to your bookstore and pick up a copy of Reversing Dry Eye. You'll be glad you did.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Welcome back once again, Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Steve Maskin here with my guest expert, Dr. Lennox Hoyt, urogynecologist. We've been talking about pelvic pain, and we've covered a lot of different causes of pelvic pain in the reproductive aged woman. But Lennox, let's talk a little bit about the non-reproductive woman, middle-aged or elderly, who has pelvic pain. What runs through your mind in that area?
Sure. Many times when a woman that in the post-menopausal range shows up with pelvic pain pressure type issues, a lot of these women will talk about having pain with intercourse as well. And the pain now is described as more of a scratchy, scrapey kind of pain. And pain usually when intercourse begins, entry of the penis into the vagina, as opposed to a deep pain syndrome. In those women, I'm at that point on the lookout for low estrogen levels in the vagina, which causes a problem called vaginal atrophy. The vagina is normally very sensitive to estrogen and uses estrogen as a tonic or as a medication for building up the glands in the vagina, thickening the cells, and allowing those cells to produce a sugar lubricant that actually protects the vagina as well. And so an examination in the postmenopausal woman, I look for basically evidence of drying out or thinning of the vaginal lining. associated with pain when I touch those thinned out, excoriated areas.
Okay.
Usually treatment with a vaginal estrogen therapy, like a Premarin cream or an Estrace cream or a Vagifem, put directly into the vagina every night for 2 weeks and then 2 to 3 times a week thereafter. That therapy, usually over the course of 4 to 6 weeks, will rebuild the vaginal lining and bring it back to the state that it was in a premenopausal space.
Hmm.
At that point, the woman is usually able to have intercourse without difficulty, and odor discharge actually gets better.
I was going to ask you, and otherwise, if when a woman is not taking the estrogen and nevertheless has this atrophic vaginitis, are they at risk developing bacterial vaginosis or other diagnoses?
I'm glad you mentioned that. So one of the things that the vaginal estrogen does, as I mentioned, number one is increases blood flow to the vagina. Number two is that it increases the thickness of the cells in the vagina and allow the glands in those cells to release a lubricant that's a sugar. That sugar actually attracts lactobacilli, which break the sugar down into an acid that keeps the vagina safe from bacterial vaginosis producing bugs. So it can actually reduce the discharge with odor that these women have as well. And it can actually also make bladder symptoms improve.
Really?
So it will actually improve the urinary frequency urgency symptoms that these women have.
And tell me about how that, what's the mechanism of action of how it improves bladder symptoms?
You know, the thought is that with estrogen in the vaginal area, it changes the vaginal lining. It also increases blood flow. So increased blood flow through the bladder tissues might actually make them behave better and feel less irritated.
Wow. Very interesting. Okay. All right. So postmenopausal woman, and what percentage of women postmenopausal will get atrophic vaginitis?
You know, usually about 10 to 15 years after menopause in women who have not had estrogen replacement therapy, that's when I start seeing the women that have the vaginal atrophy symptoms.
Okay, so say roughly 50 on up.
Yeah, menopause usually occurs 48 to 55, give or take, and probably in the 60 to 65 to 70 age range.
Okay, and by through taking the estrogen cream, you can improve symptoms of painful sexual intercourse, as well as reduce the risk of developing other symptoms like bacterial vaginosis, and possibly even bladder symptoms.
Yes.
And you mentioned the preferred way to take the cream nightly for 2 weeks, I think you said.
Every night for 2 weeks and 2 or 3 times a week thereafter. A lot of women are going to have concerns about estrogen and breast cancer. There's been a lot in the press of late about estrogen related to breast cancer and bone protection and colon cancer and stroke and heart disease and such. Mm-hmm. My belief about the vaginal estrogen preparations is they're not significantly absorbed into the bloodstream to affect any of those discussions.
Mm-hmm.
And I leave the discussions about estrogen therapy, oral estrogen therapy, to the experts in that area, which I'm not.
Okay. All right. So this is an excellent tip and pearl for our listeners out there in that age group. That's excellent. All right.
Estrogen is actually it's not over the counter. You have to get it by prescription.
Okay. I'd like to thank my guest, Dr. Lennox Hoyt, for being with me today and sharing his expertise and pearls on pelvic pain. And next week, topic will be blepharitis. We'll discuss irritable eyes, uncomfortable eyes, dry eyes. And you can call in with your questions. In the meantime, have a great week. We'll see you next week.
Good to be here, Steve.
The Focus on Females Healthcare Education programs are for you. Visit our free 5th annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27th, 2010, at the Tampa Convention Center, and every Sunday from 1 to 2 p.m. for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic on Talk Radio 860 WGUL.